first test at the Gabatoir in a couple of days' time. Lots of news around the Australian side. Lots of news around Australian cricket as well with the banning of Emily Smith. Chris Barrett is the lead cricket writer for the Sydney Morning Herald. He's joined us on the line. G'day, Chris.
Good morning, guys.
First to James Pattinson. Do we think it was a little severe, the punishment, or are you happy with it?
No, I think he's probably got out of it all right, actually. I mean, I don't think in this day and age, and with, you know, with Cricket Australia being so keen on promoting their, you know, their inclusive values, that you can come out with something like that, even though it was in the, you know, in the heat of battle, and that, you know, I'm sure he would say he didn't mean it, etc. I think it's a fair enough penalty, and take into account, you know, he had those two priors in the past 18 months. I think probably got out of it all right, and he's licking his wounds and will be back for Adelaide. I don't reckon he was going to play anyway, but not that matters. But I think most people around the place, I think, are reasonably comfortable with that penalty.
What about the penalty for Emily Smith for posting on Instagram an hour before the game? Is that an overreaction from Cricket Australia? Is the right ban? What's your thoughts, Chris?
Well, that one seems excessive.
Yeah.
I mean, apparently there's a closed Instagram account. She's put it on there as a joke about where she was batting, lower down than maybe she thought she would be. And as well, she shouldn't have really had her phone. There's rules around the players and officials area at venues where teams are stationed, dressing rooms and the surrounding areas, for anti-corruption reasons. And the Hurricanes have actually been fined for breaches of those rules, in relation to that match. So, you know, look, it does seem pretty harsh to be wiped for the whole BBL season, given that, you know, that is the centrepiece of the women's game if you're not playing international cricket. So, but they're trying to make a stand on this sort of stuff. You would have hoped maybe she wouldn't have been scrubbed for an entire Big Bash campaign, but there you go.
Well, Chris, how much do you know has that cost her? Like, how much? What are match payments for the WBBL?
Oh, look, they're not enormous, but it would have cost her. It's well into five figures.
Right.
You know, that obviously they've professionalised the women's game, certainly at the international level. If you're an Australian player, if you're Elise Perry and Alyssa Healy, you're travelling pretty well into six figures and beyond. But these women that are playing in the Women's Big Bash League and then just state cricket, they might be looking at, I don't have the figures in front of me, but they might be looking at, you know, 30 to 50 and somewhere in that range.
It's a lot of money.
Putting those things together is a lot of money. It's opportunity as well. So it would be certainly hitting someone like her pretty hard.
Nassim Shah, we were talking about him this morning, set to become the youngest test debutant in Australia by a significant amount too, by the way, 16 years and 277 days. He's only played the six first-class games. And Laurie makes a really good point, Chris. What do you think Australian selectors would be doing with a 16-year-old if they were showing the same amount of talent?
Well, I don't know. I don't think they'd be playing first-class cricket. We haven't seen too many 16-year-olds even play first-class cricket lately. So, look, they'd be going through the underage system, no doubt. And then if they're really, really handy, getting a start at state level. And, Pat Cummins was playing test cricket at 18, wasn't he? Not for long, but and obviously played in for New South Wales before that. So there are sort of examples of teenagers getting a start. There's been some more recent ones as well, but 16 is pretty stretching it a fair bit. He looks all right too. My colleague Phil Lutton was over at the Gabba yesterday watching him train while I was over where the Australians were across town. And they're certainly not saying he won't play. They've got a cast of new fast bowlers without no longer have Amir and Wahab Riaz. So he's every chance to play. It's a great story. They've all rallied behind him. Of course, his mum died while they were in Perth for the Australia A game, but he decided to stay out here and stick it out, and it'd be an amazing story if he plays. Mm.
Your article on the back page of the Sydney Morning Herald today about, and we mentioned it before, the Steve Smith ban, along with Warner and Bancroft, and Pooran from the West Indies charged with ball tampering. Is this going to be the thing that holds cricket back in a little way, because the ICC obviously increased those penalties, like you suggest in the article, but they're nowhere near in comparison to what our stance is as a country?
Yeah, well, and they're not going to be either, are they? I mean, that's the point of it. The ICC have bumped it up. I mean, basically, it was a slap across the wrist, a real slap across the wrist previously, before they increased the bans after Cape Town. But yeah, look, it's up to a board to do that. And Cricket Australia, obviously, because of the enormity of the situation 18 or so months ago, decided to do that and wipe those guys out for 12 months and nine for Bancroft. But I guess there's some disparity in the actual offence. You know, there wasn't a foreign object bore on the ground, and there wasn't the conspiracy surrounding it. Or at least nothing's been publicly told about that, or some of the dishonesty afterwards. But I thought it was interesting to hear from Smith about something like that, because there's only been two ball tampering instances since Cape Town. And he knows this guy from the Caribbean Premier League, and it's sort of the first time he's been asked about one. It's also the first time that there's been a ball tampering instance since the ICC bumped up those Smith.
People are more aware of mental illness than ever before, and it happens in all sports and it happens in society. But given that there's been three recent cricketers that have been a part of the Australian setup taking a break with mental illness, how much of a concern is this for Cricket Australia?
Yeah, it's a pretty big one, Laurie. I mean, those three players you talk about, Maddison, Maxwell and Bukowski, you know, the way it's told to me, they're different instances. They're different reasons. I don't think Nick Maddison's even cricket related. So it's hard to, in some ways, to present a catch-all response to this issue, because you know, you're dealing with people's individual circumstances. They may have, you know, backgrounds of mental health problems. So it's difficult to say, well, cricket's a contributing factor here. I suppose what cricket can do is just try and alleviate, you know, triggers, for want of a better word, as best as they can. And in that way, they're having a look at things like the schedule. You know, they're trying to get, you know, things like communication and feedback with selectors absolutely right. But, you know, I don't think it's necessarily going to fix this. It's a society problem, isn't it? And as I say, it's a worry. They're learning on the run. They're working with, you know, a youth mental health organisation called Origin.
Yep.
Who's doing some survey work for them and helping them and, you know, strategise how they take on this issue. But they certainly don't pretend to have all the answers. You know, a few people do. And I suppose they hope that, you know, these guys can get back and play at the top level pretty soon. But they're encouraging them while they're having a spill.
Yeah, yeah. Handled it very well, have Cricket Australia in that regard. Australia v Pakistan starts on Thursday. $1.22 the Aussies, $8 the draw, $6.50 for Pakistan. Thanks for that this morning, Chris. Enjoy the test match.
Good on you guys. See you soon.